This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and then bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our friend Tom Horn. And Tom is, well, he's an ordained minister, but in recent years, he's been doing publishing. And he's publishing books that deal with the supernatural. Now, people say, sort of shrug their shoulders, supernatural. But there really is a supernatural event to mention. In fact, if you believe in the Bible, you see all sorts of supernatural events occurring, whether Jesus walking on the water or healing the blind or resurrecting from the dead or reappearing to a group of his disciples after his resurrection and coming into a room that is totally locked. There's no way he could have done that other than he materialized. But people have to understand that there is a supernatural realm. There is a spiritual battle taking place today. And Tom has written a number of books about this. And he's also, of course, published books by other people going into the supernatural. Tom, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Well, Dr. Monteith, it's such a pleasure to be back on with you again. You know, I always love being on any of your shows.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Of course, we were going to talk about your book on the Stargate tonight. But, of course, your book on the Ehrman Gate did very, very well. Just gets into the animal-human cloning of these bizarre things that are going on today. But let's get into the background of what is the Stargate. What is this really all about? Because this book has done very, very well. Was it on Amazon, or where was it that was second only to the book by Joel Rosenberg on Endgame?
Yeah, well, that's the new book, Mifflin Stargate. And actually, that book came out July 1 of last year, so it's essentially 12 months that the book has been out, and I checked it this week, and Joel Rosenberg's book Epicenter was number one, and my book was number two in the prophecy section at Amazon. So that book has just astonished me, and I want to tell your audience something. You know, you might recall that both of these books, the novel that you mentioned, The Ehrman Gate. By the way, we just got a movie deal on the Ehrman Gate. We signed the paper. They've already made a payment to us, which in my mind made it real. You know, because until money changes hands, it's all just talk. But there's a movie deal on it, so we've already agreed to write the sequel. We should have the sequel to the Ehrman Gate out next year. We have an astonishing, and in fact, I think it's an unprecedented plot that I think will answer a lot of questions for people. And as far as I know, nobody has ever seen this before. So we're very excited about that, the Ehrman Gate 2, that'll be coming out. And then this latest book that you mentioned, Nephilim Stargates, it's not only number two. I don't know what I'm going to have to do to kick Joel Rosenberg out of number one. I haven't been able to do that yet. But in any case, it is the all-time best-selling book for the publisher, and in fact set sales records at Prophecy in the News, Southwest Radio Church, and other places. But I believe that people can get either of these books directly from you, can't they?
They're going to be, we carry the Stargate. We don't carry Endgame. We probably should.
No, I'm talking about the Ehrman Gate.
Oh, yes, we have both of your books.
And
we carry them.
Stargate.
All right.
So
well,
anybody that wants to get those, don't go to Amazon. Just get them directly from you. But as you know, or maybe you don't, Dr. Monteith, both of those books actually owe a bit of gratitude to you. I think I mentioned this once before, some years ago. I'll tell this story after we come back from the break.
All right, fine. Well, our listeners are going to have to get the tape to hear that, because we're going to go to we have to break for commercials, unfortunately, but that's how we're able, at least in part, to stay on the air. That and the fact that we have people out all across America who believe in our message and believe we're really involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend, Tom Horn. Tom, go right ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, both of those books we were talking about a moment ago, The Ehrman Gate and also Nephilim Stargates, Actually, the full title is Nephilim Stargates, The Year 2012 and The Return of the Watchers. But both of those owe a bit of gratitude to you, because if you remember some years ago, I was one of the spokespersons for Cloud 10 Pictures' movie Deceived, and you had agreed to participate in the promotion of that film, and you had me come on and talk about that film. But that night, now keep in mind, that was a decade ago. That was a long time ago. And I asked you that night if, as a retired medical doctor, you believed that we would ever actually really see some of the things that were being depicted in that movie about enhanced humans and telekinesis and that sort of thing. And you told me about a medical conference that you had just come back from and some of the stuff that was troubling. And the amazing thing was you were talking that night about hypothetical sciences, applications like cloning, human-animal hybrids, things that didn't even exist a decade ago, and of course they do today, and I believe that you told me that if the Lord didn't intervene, some of that stuff would happen. So, you know, you're, in addition to being a great host and a great author, you're also a prophet.
Well, I'm not a prophet, because prophets, if they're wrong, they get stoned, and I don't want to put myself in that position,
but you were in that case, you were very prophetic, but in any case, it was that evening. It really was. I've told this story on a lot of different radio shows. I've talked about this on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie and other people, that it was the night that I did that show with you. And I was so astonished that to hear a former medical doctor telling me that, yes, I mean, if the Lord doesn't intervene, this is the direction that we are going in. And you know, 10 years ago, the idea that we would be creating human embryos that are part animal was so astonishing to me that we would actually even dare to become our own gods in such a way, and actually to affront the divine order, to affront God in such a way. And yet here we are, and you know, it's what's happening all around the world now. It's also happening here in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that in these private laboratories that are receiving private funding, even in the state of California, we're doing a lot of research right now in the blending of humans and animals, and some scientists are now saying that it won't be even 10 years, and I believe this, it won't be even 10 years that we will be growing to full maturity some of these human-animal chimeras. So, but it was astonishing that it was the show I did with you that night. It got me thinking about all this stuff. I started doing all this research. I wound up with thousands and thousands of pages of research material. I was talking to people who were actually practicing molecular biology. I've got
to... Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment when we bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom was simply talking about how we had done a program sometime about 10 years ago, and he was actually representing Cloud 10 Productions on a motion picture they did called Deceived. It was basically the story of the fact that there were people within the military who were trying to tap into the supernatural. They really are. They hold divisions within our military, trying to tap into this other dimension to use it for military purposes. Of course, I think they're playing with fire. But I know they're doing this. I actually saw what a major general in the United States military had done, taking a spoon and bending it around a couple of times. A spoon I couldn't even budge, but I held that spoon in my hand. It made not only one circle but two. The end product of investment of millions of dollars of our tax money to tap into the other dimension. Well, Tom certainly got interested in this, and really some of these bizarre things, this idea of blending human and animal genes and trying to create a hybrid between humans and animals. And believe me, this is going on today. They're putting a human brain genes and developing mice and rats with a human or partly human brain. Frightening things, and God will not put up with this indefinitely, I'm absolutely certain. But you go ahead, Tom. You've written a wonderful book, The Ahriman Gate.
That's exactly right. If people can get The Ahriman Gate, the novel, or if they want the nonfiction, Nephilim Stargates, they can get that from you, too. And these summarize, to some extent, the research that I did. And, you know, I really became passionate about this because I've been a pastor for 25 years, and my worldview certainly was from a conservative Christian background, and I had concerns about the idea that we would now dare to cross over species barriers, which God had commanded in the scriptures for us not to do. And, you know, as a pastor, a retired pastor, I started asking myself, the big question, Dr. Monteith, what does God know that we don't know? I mean, you know, why would he have ordered that each kind reproduce after its own kind? And the amazing thing is, the only historical record that we have where intelligences capable of manipulating genetics dared to cross over the species barrier were those, the watchers, which left their estate, and it's led to chaos. It eventually led to the Great Flood, and it led to the condemnation of those beings who are, according to the New Testament, Peter and Jude now, and also apocryphal books like Enoch. These creatures who dared to do this are bound in everlasting chains of darkness awaiting a time of great judgment. So, to me, it was extraordinary that science now, and by the way, 10 years ago, after I had that, did that show with you, I went into the library and I started trying to find information. The internet had just barely been invented, and I was trying to find some stuff on the deep internet, and I found that year that fully 1/4 of all federal research grants were going towards the study of transgenics, and this astonished me too, because I thought, as a taxpayer, I certainly should know how my tax dollars that are you know, set aside for federal research grants are being used, and yet I was astonished that here I was a freelance writer, I was writing for some of the biggest newspapers in the U.S., and I had not ever heard of this term transgenics, and when I started looking into it, it was the whole idea that we would blend one kind of a living organism with another, or one kind of a species with another species, and the military applications were enormous, and that was a great deal of where this fully 1/4 of federal research dollars was going. So anyway, it started with that show I did with you. I wound up with thousands of pages of research material, and the thing that amazed me more, I guess, than anything else was I didn't see anybody in the faith community, and I'm talking about researchers and writers and other people, other than yourself, and really, honestly, a handful, maybe 3 or 4 people, who were even ahead of the curve enough that they were even talking about this. And it really showed me that the church in general didn't even have an idea. They didn't even have a clue that this was going on, and therefore they weren't talking about what might be the, you know, the ethics, the philosophical questions that might be raised by some of what was going on in the science. And so, anyway, I started doing research. I wrote a couple of editorials, some of which got wide publication. Cal Thomas emailed me one day and said that he thought one of the articles that I had written, in his opinion, was proof that the return of Christ had to be at the door. I started doing these radio shows, and some of them even with scientists. One of my insiders now actually works for, I won't say the name of it, but it's probably the largest corporate engineering company of genetically modified crops. So I started getting the right people who could tell me what was going on in this research. In fact, by the way, the guy from the corporation I just referred to and almost named, he told me that what was happening in his company that he worked for wasn't what I needed to really be afraid of. He said, what you really need to think about is what's happening in countries like Latin America, where the U.S. Black budgets have agreements with certain companies there, and some of the research they're doing is 25 years ahead of what we're doing at the embryonic level here. And basically what he was saying is they're already fully growing the super soldiers of tomorrow. Now, I don't know if that's true, but he said it, and he's in a position to know. And the bottom line was, I started finding over and over again that here in the U.S., some of the leading thinkers in their field, Dr. Monteith, weren't even aware 13, 14 years ago what the government was investing in. And even DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and others, they were seeing the advantages to modifying the DNA of animals, humans, and other living organisms, some of which has been published more recently on their own websites, on the Navy's, Air Force, DARPA's websites, talking about the extended warfighter programs. It's the most extraordinary thing. But what made it most interesting to me was, if all of that wasn't shocking enough, I started trying to find out, okay, so what would be either the pros or the cons? What might be the benefits to this research, or what might be the dangers to this benefits, to this research, and of the crossing of species barrier? And when it became prophetic to me was that I wasn't finding very much in the scientific community about hypothetical applications as to what might be the good or the bad of this research, because it hadn't been around long enough. What I kept running into, Dr. Monteith, was an old story about the so-called gods who came down, and they blended humans and animals for the purposes of creating a body through which they could extend themselves. And this record was told in the histories and in the mythologies of cultures around the world, and in every case it talked about how it led to judgment, chaos, the great flood, catastrophe, global catastrophe around the world when these beings came down and mingled themselves with animals and humans and produced a body through which they extended themselves into our reality.
And of course, really what is so rather frightening, anybody who's ever studied UFOs and ufology, and a lot of people sort of scoff at it and say, well, that's just a little gray man that they keep talking about. But there was certainly the people who claimed to be abducted. There were over 5,000 instances of alien abductions were gathered together by a Harvard psychologist. I think his name was John Marks, something like that. But they all had a very, very common story with mild variations, and that is that they were collecting semen from men and ovum from women, and they seemed to be fascinated with human reproduction. These beings, and I believe that they're demonic beings, I think they're from the other dimension, certainly all the evidence. Anybody who's ever really studied UFOs realizes that they're not from another galaxy. They're from another dimension. They're metaphysical, but these beings from the other dimension seem to be doing exactly what had happened thousands of years ago when God brought his judgment on the earth back at the time of Noah.
Yeah, and you know, Dr. Monteith, the thing that was interesting about all of that was the pattern. In other words, if you looked at the Bible, if you looked at the apocryphal text, if you looked at the pseudepigrapha, if you looked at the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Genesis Apocryphon, and all of these various records associated with the sacred text, they told this story of these watchers, powerful angels who had been involved with God in creation, who wanted to leave their estate. That's what Peter and Jude say. They wanted to leave their plane of existence. And to do that, it required them to construct a body that was part human and part animal into which they could extend themselves. And I think you and I have talked in the past about my theory about why they had to do that. But that was the record. Now if you go over into mythology, you see that the Greeks, the Egyptians, they also recorded this same record. Zeus comes down, he marries himself to a human, or he breeds with an animal, and you wind up with these mythological beings, part horse, part human. But the record agrees universally that it was a blending, it was a crossing over of the species of humans and animals that these so-called gods, demons, fallen angels were interested in so that they could extend themselves in our reality. For instance, there's an ancient book called Jasher. It's as old as the Old Testament. And at one time it was actually part of the Old Testament. It was expunged during the Council of Trent. But the book of Jasher, 4:18, says, after the angels went into the daughters of men, then the sons of men taught the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order to provoke the Lord. And then God saw the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth, all men and all animals, Jasher 4:18. So there's these ancient records that support the story that you find in Genesis chapter 6. But then there's also what you talked about in ufology, where Dr. John Mack that you referred to and others found that whatever was going on in alien abduction not only included the collection of human DNA or ovum or blood or sperm, but you go to bed one night, you wake up the next day, and Skippy the horse is laying out in the field with parts of its face that have been removed with laser-like technology. So this there's...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment. this is Dr. Stan, our guest Tom Horn. Of course, we're really talking, just touching on this whole idea of cattle mutilation or animal mutilation. And this is one of the things that's always been a mystery. Nobody's ever wanted to talk about the supernatural implications. You'll see programs on the History of Discovery Channel mentioning this sort of thing on television, but nobody ever gets into the really spiritual implications of the amazing things that are happening today, because, of course, the last thing the people who control the media want is for the American people and the people of the world really to understand that the supernatural is not something that simply is, you know, make-believe. It is real. There is a spiritual battle going on, and there really are these dark, powerful dark forces at work, are working behind the scenes in revolt against God and God's plan for humanity and the world. So pick up the story there, Tom.
Well, you know, and you mentioned Dr. John Mack. Mack was, as far as I know, was not a person of any particular kind of faith. He may have been, but he certainly didn't ever talk about it. And the interesting thing is that the best secular researchers, Dr. John Mack, Dr. John Keel, Jacques Vallée, they all arrived at exactly the same conclusion, that whatever was going on in alien abduction, especially in this harvesting of human DNA and animal DNA, appeared to them to be identical to ancient biblical demonology. Each one of them said that in their own writings. Dr. Mack wrote about how these alien beings that appear to come to us from the sky in their strange spacecraft had presented a particular confusing challenge for him, because he was a secular researcher and a PhD and a psychologist. But he said that these things seem to partake of properties belonging to the spirit world. And he wrote that in his own book. He said that on the one hand, they seem to be able to be seen by the abductees, so they seem to be material, and these abductees can feel their bodies, and they move around, and they even inflict lesions upon them. But then he said, on the other hand, they seem to come like intermediaries. In fact, here's an interesting thing John Mack said. He said they seem to come like intermediaries from God or the devil, from a non-embodied source. And he said it was his impression that we might be witnessing an awkward joining of two different species being engineered by an intelligence that we're unable to fathom. He talked all about that in his book, Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens. And then, of course, he also recorded an extraordinary thing where he talked about how a lot of the abductees had spoke to him about their sense that at least some of their experiences weren't even occurring within the physical space-time dimension. You talked about another dimension a minute ago. And these were not scientists, but these were people who seemed to be confused about what was happening. In other words, it didn't seem to correlate with the universe as we would comprehend it. They talked about aliens breaking through from another dimension through a slit or a crack in some sort of barrier or a gateway or a portal, that they were entering the world, Mack said, from beyond the veil. And this is partly in my book, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, which people can get through your ministry. This was one of the reasons why I quoted at length many of these secular researchers, because I felt that it was important to note that whether you were a person of faith or just an honest secular investigator who had no particular religious persuasion, you come to the same conclusion that the phenomenology here...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Tom Horn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom was talking about Dr. John Mack, a psychologist back at Harvard University, who'd compiled a chronicle of some 5,000 alien abductions, and of course, even though he was apparently not a person of faith, he recognized that there was a spiritual component to this, that there was a supernatural component to the entire UFO experience and alien abductions. Certainly Jacques Vallée, who is probably the world's leading expert on UFOs and certainly not a person of faith, I came to the ultimate conclusion that, the UFOs were metaphysical. They were not materialized. In other words, they could materialize, and then they could dematerialize. They could they can violate all the laws of physics because they seem to come from another dimension. And certainly I have a book written by the former head of the British military, it was called the British Air Force, called Above Top Secret. And his conclusion was, of course, that there would be no way that these UFOs were any sort of a government weapon. If there were, he'd know about it. He was in charge of all the Air Force in Great Britain. And he'd come to the same conclusion. This is all metaphysical. And until people begin to realize, of course, we live in a material world. We see things from a material point of view, but there really is another dimension out there. It is impossible to understand the things we're talking about as far as UFOs. It is impossible to understand the insane things that are happening politically. And certainly going on in the world today, as so much of what's happening just doesn't, from a logical point of view, makes sense. Our being over there in Iraq, why would we have gone over to Iraq? How could our leaders have been so stupid as to think that we were being threatened by Saddam Hussein when there was no evidence to verify that fact? But if you understand that there is a supernatural element that is motivating many of our leaders to do things that are drawing us ever closer to what I believe, of course, is God's ultimate plan for the end times. But you go right ahead, Tom.
Well, I mean, you are so correct, and the thing we've been talking about so far all night, I'm actually glad that we're on this subject. I thought we was going to talk about genetic modification, and we are, but we're actually talking more maybe about the deeper subject, about those spiritual forces that have an interest in human and animal DNA, and they have a particular reason, and both Mac, and especially Jacques Vallée, and Keel concluded that it seemed to be for the purposes of constructing a body into which they could extend themselves. Now imagine that. How echoing is that to what had occurred with the biblical account of the sons of God who saw the daughters of men, that they were fit extensions through which they could extend themselves into our reality and came under judgment. I also believe there's prophetic reasons why that's happening. But the bottom line is, anybody listening to this show should know that repeatedly in all of the world's oldest books, including the Bible, there are stories where there are acts, if you will, of encounter between people and other dimensional intelligence, and that this has occurred physically and mentally as these beings have been described as coming through portals or dimensions or one plane of reality into another.
Sort of like a Stargate, right?
Exactly. Well, the whole purpose is behind the names that I use for my book. But you might also remember, keeping this on a supernatural or even demonic plane, you might remember how in 1918 you had famed occultist Aleister Crowley. And he actually attempted to create a dimensional vortex, to open a Stargate, and that he hoped would bridge the gap between the world of the seen and the unseen. And he conducted a ritual that was called the Alamantra working. And according to Crowley, he became successful when a presence manifested itself through this rift that he created. And the interesting thing is he called this being that came through Lamb, and he drew a picture of it. And anybody who wants to go to Google or to Wikipedia or something and look up the picture of Lamb, keep in mind that this picture was drawn by Aleister Crowley about 100 years ago, and it is amazingly similar to the alien grays of modern pop culture. And then you had, 3 decades later, rocket scientist and co-founder of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Jack Parsons, which I believe, Dr. Monteith, you've talked about before in terms of his interest in the occult, and his pal, L. Ron Hubbard, who started the Church of Scientology, they conducted a second ritual called the Babylon Working. And this was an attempt to reopen this gateway that had been created by Crowley, because these two men were students of Aleister Crowley. But in the Babylon Working, they weren't trying to bring back Lamb. What they wanted to do was to incarnate the spirit of Babylon, the archetypal divine feminine. They wanted to bring through the spirit of Babylon into our current generation.
In fact, there's so many of these things really fit together. Of course, most people are intrigued by this idea of the Loch Ness Monster. Where did Aleister Crowley live? He lived on Loch Ness. In fact, he was known to his people, his neighbors, as the Other. Loch Ness Monster. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our good friend Tom Horn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Tom is talking about these people who've tried to open the Stargate. Basically, it is the dimension, it is the crack, it's the entrance, the doorway, what would we call it, into the other dimension. Of course, the medium, certainly the fortune teller, the diviner, these people who were told, of course, in the book of Deuteronomy to avoid, but these people all certainly seem to be able to contact this other dimension. And of course, Aleister Crowley, Ron Hubbard, the others, Sidney Parsons, all trying to contact the other dimension to learn how to do it. But it is brilliant. I mean, there are a number of people who actually can go into a trance and become demonically possessed. And this is the phenomenon that is used with automatic writing, with channeling. Certainly, Polina Petrovna Blavatsky and Alice Bailey, two of the leaders of theosophy, all their books, manuscripts were channeled to them from the other dimension. But go right ahead, Tom.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, before we went to that break, we were talking about Aleister Crowley and his attempt to bring something from one dimension into another, and he brought through or at least he claimed to bring through lamb, drew a picture of it. It looked just like an alien gray, and then you had his students, Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, the Church of Scientology founder, who followed in his steps and tried to reopen his Alamantra working with their own ritual called the Babylon working, but their hope was to incarnate the whore of Babylon. They literally wanted to bring through a demon child, if you will, a Gaborim. They actually had a woman that they were using, that they were trying to prostitute through her, a demon child. And Parsons, during that whole ritual, he talked about how at one point he felt that they were successful because this brownish yellow light had come through this dimensional vortex, and at the same moment he was struck by something invisible and a candle was knocked out of his hands. Anyway, those records are available for anybody. But the interesting thing to me, Dr. Monteith, was to note how that following Crowley's magic portal, which produced this alien-looking lamb, and Hubbard and Parsons' Babylon working ritual, that Crowley died in 1947, and I talk about this in the book Nephilim Stargates, which people can get from you. He died in 1947, this very same year that the Roswell crash occurred, and also when Kenneth Arnold said that he saw flying saucers or something like a flying saucer.
Well, that's all. I'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Tom Horn, and fascinating discussion. But before we go on, Tom, I'd like you to get out your website and, of course, tell people what they'll get there. You've got a lot of great articles up on, I'll let you give the name of the website.
Well, certainly. Anybody who wants to visit our news site, it's updated every day. The name of the news site is RaidersNewsNetwork.com or RaidersNewsUpdate.com. And Raiders is spelled just like the football team, R-A-I-D-E-R-S, RaidersNewsUpdate.com. Millions of people visit that site every month, and we, of course, are always looking for new people to find that site, and very happy if people want to come there and see what we do, because we talk about a lot of these issues. We try to be everything that all of the other conservative or Christian news sites are not, in that we are willing to talk about these issues. However, we don't use spurious news sources. We always try to make sure that any news source we quote is a legitimate news source, because we don't want to get egg on our face, and we certainly don't want people to think we're the weekly world news of the Christian community, you know. But we are willing to talk about things. And as far as I know, we're probably the leading commentator or news site out there right now, excuse me, on things like what the prophetic possibilities of biotechnology, the blending of species, things like that might be.
It's very fascinating, of course, but we were talking earlier about the fact that both Aleister Crowley and L. Ron Howard and Jack Parsons, who headed our space agency, they were all trying to open this Stargate, this vehicle by which you could contact the other dimension. Well, of course, we know that the fortune tellers and the mediums and the diviners actually do. And this is one reason why we're told in the book of Deuteronomy, avoid these people, avoid this at all time, because God recognized the fact that it's fascinating to human beings, fascinating to the idea that you could tap into this other dimension and perhaps get great wealth, great power, certainly tremendous advantage. In fact, this is actually being pushed by Oprah Winfrey and Larry King in the form of Rhonda Byrne's writings on The Secret. And that's really what she is telling you, that there is another dimension there. You can tap into that because you are God. And, of course, you may think that's rather ridiculous, but millions of people are following her writings, are following her teachings, and of course, are tapping into this other dimension, whether they recognize it or not. And, of course, in so doing, they ensure their eternal damnation. So, certainly, the frightening thing is that these things have been kept secret for thousands of years. I mean, certainly the rulers of the past, the military generals, many of our great philosophers understood this, but certainly the average individual has never until recently, when suddenly, for the first time in recorded history, so much as this is being popularized for the average individual, and of course you are told you can tap into this mysterious source of power, but you do so, of course, at your great danger to your eternal salvation. So I'm really very, very concerned about what's going on.
Well, you know, there was a story that was out this week, a news story this week, talking about, you probably saw the one story where it was talking about how 98% or something like that of Americans believe in God, but they also believe that Christianity is not necessarily the only way. And there was a follow-up story to that, talking about how that the church, that this is the institution, the organization, local church attendance, is in its 10th year of decline, where Wicca and other forms of New Age paganism are doubling every 6 months. So the bottom line, Dr. Monteith, is that people have not lost their interest in the supernatural, but it is turning now in a very prophetic way towards embracing religions that really the New Testament church throughout the book of Acts so utterly defeated that within 200 years of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, there was not a single person on earth that cried out, "Great is the goddess Diana." But they're doing it today, and they're doing it by swelling numbers. I think it's very prophetic. I think it indicates where we are in this moment in time. And this whole thing with Crowley, and Hubbard and Parson and the Alamantra working and the Babylon working. What I was going to say before we went to the break a minute ago was how that I found it ironic in my studies how that that Crowley died in 1947, and this was the same year that this whole, you know, this crash event took place at Roswell, which is, by the way, the Roswell Festival is starting in just a few days. It happens over the 4th of July weekend. And that whole thing occurred, and also Kenneth Arnold started seeing his flying saucers, and there was something, it seems like something in the history of our country and in the history of the world did occur, because around the world there was an increase in the sightings of this strange phenomenon. You mentioned UFOs a moment ago and the demonological qualities to that, and earlier in the show I talked about how even secular researchers have admitted that all of the phenomenon that is related to ufology and UFO flap areas and alien abduction seems to smack of ancient biblical demonology. But this whole thing about Crowley dying in 47 and then all this stuff happening made me wonder, as outrageous as this might sound, if maybe some kind of a portal was indeed opened by these invitations, and maybe at a bigger sense, the whole attitude, maybe, of our nation and the willingness of people to begin embracing the occult, because you know, you have all these adepts of Enochian magic and Ordo Templo Orientis, which was Crowley's. He was the head of all that. They believed that he and Hubbard and Parsons, that they succeeded and that they opened this vortex, and that for that matter, the whore of Babylon is walking the earth today. Now, I earned an honorary degree for my research, a doctorate for my research into this study, because what I also talked about was how that Christian theologians also believe that there are super intelligent beings, and that under some extraordinary or maybe even specific circumstances, that these beings can move from their plane of existence into our reality, and they can interact with us, especially where they're invited. And in my book, Nephilim Stargates, which people can get directly from you, I talk about how these beings are recorded in the Bible as inhabiting the air, the earth, the sea, and space. For instance, the physical earth contains living spiritual forces. The book of Revelation talks about the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates in Revelation chapter 9. Job talks about how dead things are formed from under the waters, and the word there is the Rapha, which is a reference to the fallen offspring of the watchers. You have these other references, 2 Peter 2, Jude 6, where the earth is viewed as a kind of holding tank or a prison, if you will, where God has bound certain fallen entities, and that such fallen spirits would seek to communicate with or to participate in the affairs of humanity is defined in the scripture that you were talking about earlier, Deuteronomy 18:11, where the Hebrews were warned of spirits that would seek communication with them. And when the witch of Endor, the maiden of the Ob, when Saul went to her and she communicated with these spirits, the text there says they were ascending up from out of the earth as gods. So, of course, you know, the biggest conspiracy in history involving portals and those that came through them is what we opened this show with, this legendary accounting of the Watchers, who wanted to leave their plane of existence and they wanted to come down to the earth. I'm curious, and I know that you are the host and I'm the interviewee, but I'm very curious, Dr. Monteith. I wanted to ask you what you thought about this most recent step by the Vatican officials towards almost what looks like disclosure. I mean, you had this Vatican chief astronomer, Father Jose Gabriel Funes, in this long interview with a Vatican newspaper last month, saying that there is a certain possibility of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe, and that the notion of that does not contradict the faith of the Catholic Church, and that going along with that was other commentary you've had from Guy Consul Magno and other Vatican astronomers who in the last 24 months, Consul Magno actually said that there is a better than not possibility now of contact with extraterrestrial intelligence. I mean, to me it just seems like we're living in the most extraordinary time. I would not almost have been able to dream that we would be living in a time like this.
Well, I agree with you totally, but of course I do not believe these are extraterrestrial. I believe these are demonic beings that they're in contact with, and certainly what better place to actually destroy Christianity than to infiltrate Catholicism. I think the Catholic religion has been infiltrated by these dark spiritual forces for some time. In fact, it was Paul VI who talked about the smoke of Satan circulating over the top of the Vatican. And those who heard our four tape set interviews with Father Malachi Martin as he gets into the windswept house and the satanic ceremony to Satan held in the basement of the Vatican. And when I talked to him off the air, he said this was not simply fiction, this was real. But I feel these same forces are at work within the Protestant Church as well. And when we can see a homosexual cocaine user like Ted Haggard leading the 30 million evangelical local Christian organization, the National Association of Evangelicals. He was there because he had a lot of friends who were pushing him to a key position. Ted Haggard, of course, I believe homosexuality has a strong spiritual component, a revolution against God, and yet here's the man leading the Protestant religion, and I think he's probably not alone. He may be the only one who's been exposed. But I believe these spiritual forces within men have infiltrated every one of the religions of the world, but specifically Christianity, the two branches, both Catholic and Protestant, because, of course, this is really a conspiracy against God. This is what it's all about, and until we can understand that, we can't understand anything that's going on in the world today. That conspiracy infiltrates our political system, our educational system, our banking system, and how can I say that? Well, very simply, I read what the other side says, and anybody would like to get the publication, put out the Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy, it's actually published by the Lucis Trust. Used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, but it's today it's called the Lucis Trust, and they put this out, part of the writings of Alice Bailey, that were actually channeled to her by a demonic spirit, and she will tell you that they have their people planted at every level of our society, and why aren't our Christian leaders warning us what's going on? And I think it's probably most of them really don't know, because they've infiltrated our seminaries, they've infiltrated our religious organizations, and people who talk like you and I ordinarily don't get invited on much of anything, but other than George Norrie, and I'm so glad you got on there, because an awful lot of good people listen to George, and I just hope that you were able to reach them with your presentation.
You know, here's a wonderful thing. George Norrie has never once, ever limited anything that I ever wanted to say, and in fact has encouraged me to be very open on Coast to Coast. I've been on there many times. I probably can go on almost any time I want to. If I have something to talk about, I just get a hold of the producer and go on. So this is extraordinary because, you know, my deepest world view is very different than probably most of the people that are listening to the program, or at least a lot of the people that are listening to the program. And yet... You know, I'm kind of a maverick. You're kind of a maverick. But you mentioned Malachi Martin. He was a maverick, too.
He sure was.
And he was on Coast to Coast all the time with Art Bell, for crying out loud. And you remember, it was Art Bell who asked him one time, this was in 1999, he asked him why the Vatican was heavily invested in the study of deep space at Mount Graham Observatory in southeastern Arizona. And here's Martin, you know, he's a retired professor of the Pontifical Biblical Institute. I mean, he was absolutely qualified to hold in secret information pertaining to the Vatican's Advanced Technology Telescope, the VAT project at Mount Graham International Observatory in Arizona. And when Art Bell asked him, why is the Vatican so heavily invested in the study of deep space, Martin gave an answer that ignited a firestorm among, well, both Christian and secular ufologists, because he said that the mentality at the highest levels of the Vatican administration and geopolitics knew something about what was going on in space and what is approaching us. That's what Martin said. And he said it could be of the greatest importance in the next 5 to 10 years. Well, think about those cryptic words. What's approaching us could be of importance in the next 10 years. That was in 1997. Well, we just passed the 10-year time frame, and some people have thought, you know, 2007 was the end of whatever his prediction was. Now, I don't know if he was guessing. I don't know if he knew something. I know he was looking for something in the sky, and I know that Malachi very much was to the, you know, the New York Times referred to him as an eminent Catholic theologian, but inside the Jesuit movement and some of the other membership of the Catholic organization, they saw him with disdain because of his willingness to talk openly about some of the things that you mentioned a moment ago. But, well, my whole question about all of this is, okay, we just reached, it was interesting, or I said reached, we just reached the end of Malachi's prediction. This year, the Vatican has announced they're probably going to close down VAT. Makes you wonder if it's because they've just they've discovered everything they needed to know or whatever, but they've decided that they're going to defund that research. And yet at the same time, you've had most recently Father Jose Gabriel Funes saying that the introduction, if you will, of extraterrestrial intelligence would not unhinge the authority of the Church. You had before that in 2005, you had Guy Consolmagno writing his book, a 50-page book that was actually published by a Vatican publishing house called Intelligent Life in the Universe, in which he said more likely than not now we will face this issue. Before that, you had Monsignor Corrado Balducci saying that ETs had already been interacting with members of the Church. And now you have these most recent things. It makes you just wonder if some of these authorities think they know something that the rest of us don't know, and that we're moving toward a climactic moment in time.
Well, I think there's no question at all we are. Well, I guess this evening has been Tom Horn, and of course he has a publishing house. He's putting out all sorts of great books, including two he's written, of course, Aramon Gate and Nephilim Stargate. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this program. Ladies and gentlemen, at least consider looking into it. Could it be real? Well, Tom, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Monteith, I just want to say thank you for having me on your show. Next time we do a show, maybe we'll talk more about the whole idea behind the enhancement of the human species. You might have saw an interesting article at Wired Magazine, I think it was last week, but they were talking about how the Jasons, at the top Pentagon scientists, how they're afraid now of brain-modified enemies of our soldiers. Did you see that article?
No, I really didn't.
And the interesting thing about it was because these were not, you know, tin-hat kooks wearing a Defense Department badge. This is the celebrated scientist on the Pentagon's highest prestigious scientific advisory panel, the Jasons, and they were literally talking about how enemy activities in sleep research, and that's the interesting part, because it has to do with neuropharmaceutical performance enhancement, changing humans, brain-computer interfaces, and genetic modification of humans, and the Jasons. I mean, this is the top thinking cartel, if you will, inside the Pentagon, talking about the danger of advances in human performance modification on the side of our enemies, and that how this would be a threat to national security. Anybody that wants to look that up, I think that article was called Top Pentagon Scientists Fear Brain Modified Foes, and it actually quotes the Jasons recommending that the American military push ahead now with its own performance-enhanced research, meaning modified human soldiers, and that they monitor foreign studies to make sure that our enemies don't suddenly become smarter, faster, or better able to endure the harsh realities of war than our American troops. And the astonishing part of that article was that they were most particularly concerned with brain plasticity, they called it, but with brain enhancement, brain modification, and they were also very concerned about how hardware and software now is being created that will connect to the human brain, modified human brains, chip-implanted human brains, and machines, and they were talking about how this is one of the primary threats now to our ability to maintain our sovereignty as a country.
And of course, what they're talking about is creating super soldiers who can fight for days without sleeping, and of course, would be a ferocious warrior as well. We're out of time, Tom. Maybe we can talk about that next time. Always a pleasure having you. God bless, and really looking forward to having you on again. Thanks so very much for being with us tonight.
All right, Dr. Monty. Thanks for having me on.
Good night. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest has been Tom Horn. We carry, of course, his book, The Aramon Gate, and then we carry his book, Nephilim Stargate. Aramon Gate's a matter of fiction, but going into the idea of these human-animal clones, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they're working at that. They're actually planning human genes and the grains of mice and coming up with a partly human, partly animal brain. Think of the implications of what we're doing. I mean, we're violating all of God's laws that, you know, and, but God was, one of these days is going to intervene. So his other book, Nephilim Stargate, is actually based upon testimony, articles have been written. And Aleister Crowley and Sidney, L. Ron Hubbard, Jack Parsons, did try to enter the Stargate, try to open the Stargate, an entranceway into the supernatural dimension. Because all of these people were deeply involved in the occult and Jack Parsons and our whole space program. Why are we spending so much money on space? Well, because there's a cultic background behind it. Because Parsons was the head of this whole program for years. And, of course, when we went to the moon, all sorts of occult ceremonies as we landed. But you're never going to hear about that from the controlled media, are you? Well, we've actually got two books, other books that Tom wrote. One is called Spiritual Warfare. The other is called The Gods Who Walk Among Us. The Gods Who Walk Among Us. If you'd like to get the four-tape set of my interviews with Malachi Martin, Father Malachi Martin, it's called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and I will tell you that there's information there that you just won't be able to believe if you're Catholic or Protestant. I mean, there's certainly the election of Pope John Paul II, and the fact that he was not the choice of the majority of the cardinals. But on the way, of course, is the man who was actually elected was on the way up to the podium to accept the papacy, when he was handed a note and saying, if you accept the papacy, you and, of course, all of your family will be killed. This is Mother Martin, not what I'm saying. Obviously, there are these forces working within the Vatican. They're working within the Protestant Church. They're working everywhere in society. So that's the wisdom of Malachi Martin. But hear what he had to say. And then, of course, we have certainly we have our material on the supernatural. We have a four-tape set on the supernatural. This is not imaginary. We have a book called Alien Encounters. And, of course, we have the DVD put together by our good friend Bob Fletcher. There's no question that the UFOs are out there. They're real. They've been seen many, many times and well-documented. Now, Bob believes, of course, they're alien beings from another planet. I believe they're alien beings from another dimension. But I believe that the material in this is excellent, well worthwhile your time. So you can just order, if you'd like to, Bob Fletcher's DVD on UFOs. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We do hope that you'll go there. We have another new section my son's put up entitled Other Videos. Now, we have a video section and we have other videos. I want you to go there and, of course, just go down and look at all those we have posted, and we'll be putting up new ones as time goes by. There's one there on Building 7. I want you to see if you have any question what really happened on September 11th, that watershed event that took us to war with Afghanistan, that took us to war with Iraq, that is literally bankrupting America, creating great division within our society. And of course, remember back in 2006 when all the foolish people voted for the Democrats because they thought we were going to get us out of the war. You don't understand, ladies and gentlemen. We got a one-party system with two branches. There are powerful forces behind that control both political parties, but behind that are powerful spiritual forces. If you get any of our items, you'd like to get the pamphlet on the workings of the spiritual hierarchy. The workings of the spiritual hierarchy. It was actually channeled by a demonic spirit, but it's available. We provide it for you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. We are under attack today from within. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Karen Holgate, who I've known for many years. She's been an activist working in Sacramento. I said me on the pro-life, pro-moral issues. And Karen, it's so good to have you on our program again tonight.
Wonderful to be back. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Now, where are you working now at the present time?
Well, I'm trying to retire. I'm on the board of directors for the California Family Council.
All right, fine. Well, of course, Karen has written a book, along with Steve Baldwin, called From Crayons to Condoms, and it's really a commentary on what's happening in our schools today, where we have children who know far more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, and for certainly what we're doing, of course, is indoctrinating our children in all sorts of things that are of no earthly use. We're actually raping the souls of our children, in my estimation, with sex educations and values education and death education and suicide education, and we got an awful lot of mixed up kids, don't we, Karen?
We really do, and I'll tell you, you know, this pact, or whether it was a pact or not, but the 17 girls that got pregnant in Massachusetts, you know, they're just a symptom of what's going on in our culture and with our sex education in the schools. I mean, here are these kids that have been inundated with the cultural message that sex is okay. In fact, we give the message in school that, you know, we expect all of you to be sexually active, so, hey, there's nothing wrong with it. And, you know, so here's a condom that's going to solve all your problems. The reality is that all of these girls who are now pregnant, they knew about condoms, and they are still pregnant because they think it's glamorous. They think having sex is expected of them, and there's no consequences, and they have this unreal world view that they're going to be like the celebrities that are on all the tabloids with these fat, smiling, you know, ruby-cheeked little babies, and they think their world is going to be like that. And our sex education programs are reinforcing that whole world view. And it's time for both parents and the schools to become the counterculture. Instead of being down in the gutter with the general cultural message of today, we need to rise above it and tell the girls to respect not only their bodies but themselves.
Well, I think, of course, the most amazing thing is we're so concerned about pornography on the Internet. Oh, my goodness, our children may be watching pornography on the Internet, and that's true. And we're concerned about sexual predators, and we're concerned about, of course, you know, of course, sex with minors and all this supposed concern about our children. What we are doing in our schools in the way of sex education, most of this we couldn't even discuss on a family radio program. I mean, they are destroying the modesty, the embarrassment. They are raping the souls of our young boys and girls. And, of course, there's no outcry at all. Why? It's in the name of education. Well, it's totally destructive. All we need to do is realize today in America we have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease, the end result of the sex education programs we have in our schools. When I went to school, or took medical school, we had 5 sexually transmitted diseases. Today we have well over 20. And, of course, we've ruined the lives of so many people. And all the medicines you take, you know, if you've got herpes, it's not going to prevent you, certainly, from spreading it to somebody else. And as somebody once said, you know, what's the difference between herpes and love? Well, herpes lasts forever. And I think people have to understand that we're destroying the lives of so many of our young people. And now, of course, we're going to give them Gardasil vaccine. That's going to solve the problem. No, ladies and gentlemen, God has rules, and you violate those rules, why you get into trouble. And God has those rules there for a purpose, and they're to protect us and to protect our children. Well, Karen, how did you happen to write this book along with Steve Baldwin?
Well, you know, It's interesting that you brought up the whole subject of pornography, because I actually got into the entire area of education through the pornography battle, because where I lived, we were fighting a lot of the sexual-oriented businesses, and through that I learned how sex molesters of children often use pornography to lure their children. And then I found out that California had some of the weakest child pornography laws in the state. So I started getting involved with the legislature. And the more educated I get, I started speaking on the harms of pornography and how it related to children. And it was during those speaking engagements that I started having parents bring me examples of what their children were being taught in the public school system. And I have to tell you, I was shocked. And at around that time, I met Steve Baldwin, who was at the time chair of the Education Committee. He was a state legislator at the time. And as I got more involved in the education issues, I started traveling around the United States talking to parents on education. And Steve and I kept talking, because here I am traveling throughout the United States. I'm hearing stories. Steve is hearing stories. And over the years, we finally said, you know, we have to do something with these stories. I mean, we keep getting them. They just kept getting worse and worse and worse over the years. And we finally decided to put them into a book, because, and that's basically what this book is. It's From Crayons to Condoms is a compilation of stories by parents, students, and teachers telling about their experience. And it's a wide range of issues, all the way from, you know, creative spelling, group grades, and inflated test scores, all the way to the sex ed, to the homosexual issue, to teaching Islam when you can't teach Christianity or even bring your Bible to school. And but then at the end, we end by giving parents some positive action steps that they can take. Some ideas. We give them some sample legislation that they can introduce at their own state level. Things that they can do to fight for their children and create a positive change in the schools. And that's really why we wrote the book. And we even say in the introduction that our hope is that as parents read through From Crayons to Condoms, that they don't say, that's not happening in my child's school, but instead ask, is that happening in my child's school? And then be involved and find out.
And I think you're going to find out, if you look into it, you're going to find that things are going on there. They're actually giving our children all sorts of horrible books to read, and books that have no hero, no moral lesson. I mean, they're really books all about depravity, and you go from one horrible personality to another, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Karen Holgate, who's been on the front lines of this battle for morality and for family values. How long have you been at it, Karen? Ever since I can remember?
Yeah, 1990.
1990, so that's, what, the 10, 18 years?
Yeah, long time.
Are you really thinking of trying to retire?
I really have, but, you know, about the time I moved to the board of California Family Council instead of being their legislative director, I thought, oh, good, now I'm going to retire and have a good time. And then Steve and I, all of a sudden, a publisher contacted us and said, I looked through your book, I want to publish it, and that started a whole another thing. So now I'm working harder than ever.
And, of course, the book is from Crayons to Condoms, and it's basically an overview of what's happening in our schools, mainly based upon the testimony, the stories, short stories of students and of parents, and, of course, many teachers are very concerned about what's happening, but they're trapped in the system. I mean, they have no choice, and if they were to speak out against what's going on, they'd be in real trouble, wouldn't they?
Well, they would, and you know, that's why when Steve and I did Hannity and Combs, one of Alan Combs' questions was, well, aren't these just anecdotes, you know, or are you talking about a systemic change? Well, the reality is that these are real people. They like to refer to them as anecdotes, but they're real people living in a school system that is a total systemic change, and these are how it's affecting real families. And there were hundreds of stories we couldn't print because of space. And a lot of people, both parents and the teachers, would tell us their stories, but we couldn't print them because they didn't want their names. They were afraid of retaliation either against themselves or their children.
And, of course, really, I think it's important that people understand that this is not an aberration. This is what's happening in our schools all across America. And you try to find it as a parent, why, you're going to be ostracized, you're going to be marginalized, you're going to be told, why, nobody else is concerned about this. No other parent has ever come in complaining. And they're simply lying. I mean, the teachers and the administrators are taught to lie to the parents. Isn't that true, Karen?
Oh, exactly. I can't tell you the number of parents who have told us that they were told, you're the only parent to complain, when we know that there were other parents calling the same school about the same issue. So it's another way they try to marginalize, and that's one of the things that we actually say in the back of the book is, you know, if you find something you don't like, take it to a friend. Take it to other parents within, because if you don't like it, you can bet there are other parents that feel exactly the same way you do. So get, you know, some other parents to join with you so you're not in this battle alone, so you're not feeling like the lone wolf. And there is validity to that old saying, there are strength in numbers. And then we tell parents kind of how they can work through the system.
But, can you really work through the system? Wouldn't they be far better off if they love their children to get them out of the government schools and get them either into private education or better into home education? It's a tremendous sacrifice for people. But, they do not stand a chance in the government schools because they're not there to educate. They're in there to change their attitude towards their attitudes and their beliefs.
You're exactly right. I mean, if people ask, we always tell them, if you can homeschool, do. If you can quit your job, if you can stay home and homeschool. And, you know, homeschool has such a wonderful thing now. It's not an isolated thing. There are, like, homeschool co-ops where several parents get together and they each teach different subjects and they meet at each other's homes or they meet in a church building where they can do different things and they do field trips together. So it's not, you know, being isolated, there's, again, that strength in numbers. There's all kinds of ways to get involved with your children. And, you know, I would strongly urge parents, do not put your child in a public school system.
Amen to that. Well, I would certainly echo that as well, because I think the child really doesn't stand a chance. If you love your children, get them out of the government schools. That's the best advice I can give to you. Well, Karen, certainly now, do you want to just give some examples of the stories that you tell there? What's happened to the, what parents have found, and certainly how they're using psychological testing, how they're using sex education, how they're using the new math, you know, not to teach children what they really need about math, but to teach them a system that is destined to fail so that they're really not going to be able to compete actively, teaching them not how not to read rather than teaching them simple phonics. Why don't you just pick up the story and explain what they're doing to our children, because the average parent out there really doesn't know. They leave them off at school. After all, schools should educate them reading, writing, arithmetic, and that's really not what it's about.
It really isn't. What they've really done, and a lot of this comes from our legislatures. You have activist legislators now in every state that want to pass laws either mandating things that are being taught in the schools, or they pass laws that allow activist educators to incorporate a lot of these things in their classrooms. So parents really have to be on the lookout, because it could just be your principal that's has an agenda and forcing things on the teachers, or it could be one teacher could be very conservative and teaching phonics and doing everything they can to, you know, adhere to a quality education. But the teacher in the next room may have their own agenda and doing the full-blown, you know, there's no difference between homosexuality and heterosexuality and doing the explicit sex. So that's why we say, parents, you have to be involved. But let me give you an example, because what they're doing when they can is they're trying to turn teachers into psychologists or psychiatrists even. They're asking them to do things that teachers aren't trained to do. I cannot tell you the curricula that Steve and I have seen that incorporate emotional responses from children, whether it be math or science. Here's a good example. And this is from a mother that actually lived fairly close to me, so I was involved in every step of this case. But there was a math curriculum called sorting for third grade. And what they did, this little girl came home and she started having nightmares, and they never had any problems with her. She wouldn't sleep with the light out. She would come crawling in bed with her parents. This went on for like 3 nights, and finally they kept after her until they found out that it was her math curriculum. It was called sorting. And what they went down and talked to the teacher, and they looked at the teacher's book. And she was shocked, by the way, that these parents would come in. She just couldn't understand what their problem was. And when they looked at the teacher's manual, it actually told them that they were supposed to engage the children emotionally, maybe with such subjects like Freddy Krueger, My Dead Brother, Murderers, Monsters with Big Eyes. Now, would someone please explain to me how Freddy Krueger and My Dead Brother has anything to do with teaching math to a third grader?
Well, what was the rationale behind it? And of course, were they teaching them the basic elements of math, or were they teaching this feel-good math, like, you know, 2 and 2 is 5? How do you feel about that, you know? And rather than teaching them the mathematics, they're playing games with their minds and with their very hearts and souls.
Well, exactly. And as this parent in the book says, she says, you know, basically, this teacher was creating turmoil, fear, and apprehension on our daughter, and the teacher wasn't even aware of the harm she was doing. And that's the problem. We have taken some of this curricula to psychologists and said, you know, is this good stuff or bad stuff? And, you know, especially with the death education. And without fail, they have said, you know what? They are having teachers delve into the realm of emotions and the child's psyche. And the problem is, these teachers aren't trained to realize when they have created harm in a child. And this is very dangerous.
Well, then, of course, if the child is having problems, then, of course, they'll insist that you're going to have to put them on some sort of drug, Ritalin, or Prozac, or something like that. I mean, really, we've got millions of children in America who are on psychotropic drugs. I mean, this is what's scary. It's like the brave Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
Exactly. Do you remember a show you and I did a few years ago? And a doctor called in. And his child that day, his son that week, I guess, had been told, sent home from school, and told that he could not return until he was put on Ritalin. And, of course, the father was a doctor, so he hailed it down to the school and said, excuse me, when did you send my son in for a medical evaluation without talking to me? And the school told him, well, we didn't. And he said, well, then, you know, why are you telling me I can't send my child back unless I put him on drugs? And they said, well, the teacher said she won't have him back in the classroom until he's put on Ritalin, something to calm him down. So, no, this child was just not engaged in school, and the doctor said he had pulled him out that day, and he had just enrolled him in a private school. And I think we were talking about this whole Ritalin thing then, but I thought that was very telling, and this is what often happens. Can you imagine if they had sent this child home to a family that did not have a doctor for the father?
And of course, people don't understand what Ritalin does. It works with basically the same pathways as the methamphetamine and dextrodine, and it has a physiological effect. It stunts growth. It has an effect on the pituitary gland. These kids end up with smaller brains. I mean, why would you want to do that to a child? Why would any rational individual? And the answer is, we're not dealing with rational people. We're dealing with people who have a different worldview, and we have a great four-tape set on Ritalin. A great four-tape set. If you have any question about Ritalin, why you need to get this information, you need to know what they are doing to our children, not only temporarily, but for the rest of their lives. So, of course, our guest is Karen Holgate, and certainly we're talking about what's going on in our schools. Certainly, they've known for hundreds of years how to teach people to read. You do it with phonics. And then, of course, you sound out the word, you can spell the word. But, of course, that was an effective thing. They took that away. They went to a different type of reading called look-see type of reading. And the most amazing thing, of course, what was happening is that our children couldn't read. 50 years ago, 1953, I think the book was written, Why Johnny Can't Read. And it was because they were not teaching him phonics. And they're still not teaching phonics. And they've developed a failed system. They know it's a failed system. All the experiments, studies have shown it's a failed system. That's why we're using it in our schools across America today. Well, Karen, let's talk a little bit about reading, because I think this is such a serious problem, and suddenly phonics allows you to spell out a word, to sound out a word, and then you can spell a word. This is one reason why so many children are so poor in spelling, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I have to tell you that phonics, you know, that we always talk about throwing more money at the school system and that's going to solve all the ills. Quality education does not necessarily take big bucks. For instance, there was a study done a few years ago, and phonics at that time, I think, cost something like $17.50 per child to teach, whereas whole language, or the look-see, like you called it, was something like $350 per child. And yet, phonics works. I was asked to attend a school in Temecula, California, by a first-grade teacher who only taught phonics. A brand new first year, and by the way, she was teacher of the year that year. And another brand new teacher, first year, came in, and she too wanted to teach phonics. So she was studying under this other teacher because she had not been taught how to teach phonics when she went to teacher school. So I sat in on both classrooms. One, the very experienced phonics teacher, one, the brand new first year teacher. And I have to tell you that I sat down, and every child in both of those classes read to me in first grade. And when I got all through, I asked both teachers, I said, are these all upper-income children? Are they, you know, no problems? No. There were some dysfunctional children in there who had learning disabilities, and a couple of them were struggling, but they were reading. And the other teachers in that school use whole language, and they did not have the same kind of success. I have seen it work, folks. In fact, Phyllis Schlafly, who wrote the foreword for our book, she actually says if your child is not reading by the end of first grade, get a phonics program and teach them yourself, because if they aren't reading before third grade, they'll never read well.
And, of course, the whole idea was they were not even going to teach them to read until about the third grade, knowing full well that they were losing the best time. Our children are under attack today. I think that what's going on is not by accident. I think it's by intent. And we've been talking about this, Karen, you and I, for the best part of 15 years or more. And suddenly people say, oh, well, you know, we're going to go into the schools. We're going to get our people on the school boards. And you may get your people on the school board. But they're not going to be there for very long because they're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get people off the school board. They don't want to educate our children. They want to dumb them down, and I think they're doing a phenomenal job. And,
too, that's a problem with a lot of the strategies they're doing and a big problem with the No Child Left Behind law, because it focuses so much attention on testing. And we talk in From Crayons to Condoms about a teacher from Arkansas who was a teacher under Bill Clinton when he was still governor. And she said under him, they switched to the heavy emphasis on testing, or the state was going to come in. This is where a lot of this heavy testing started. And she said, Karen, we fought it then. She said, we would get called in and said, look, you have to teach these, so we have to have strong test scores, or they're going to come in and take over our school. And she said, let me give you an example that's really easy for people to understand. She said, if you're a math teacher and you have 100 facts and you want to teach it, she said, if I'm teaching the way we should be teaching, you teach the 100 facts, and then you have a test, and you may ask 10% of that. But she said, the kids have to know all 100 facts.
Well, that's how we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sydney, the guest is Karen Colgate. We'll take calls if you're out there across America. If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Karen was just talking about, of course, what's happened in so many of the schools is emphasis on testing. Oh, my goodness, we've got to have testing to make sure the students are learning. But you were telling about this one teacher who said, look, you know, there's 100 facts we want to get off. We'll test them on 10% of them, but they have to know the whole 100 facts because they never know what the questions are going to be. So pick up the story there, Karen.
Okay, so what happened is when they switched to the heavy emphasis on testing, she said that the principal actually called in, and the school board actually called teachers in and told them that they had to start teaching those questions that were going to be asked on the test. So she said, basically, we taught the kids 10%. They did great on the test, but they only had 10% of the knowledge they needed to have. But the parents were happy, the legislators were happy, the governor was happy, because everything looked great. But she said our kids were just totally dumbed down.
And because this is what they're really doing in our schools, ladies and gentlemen. This is why when our kids graduate from high school and they're tested competitively with children from other countries, other cultures, our kids can't compete. And there's been an orchestrated effort. And we can thank the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, other foundations that have been trying to influence our educational system, not for excellence. We're not teaching our children to be superior. We're teaching them to be mediocre so they'll be readily controlled. People from other cultures, very often from India, from other areas, you know, they bring the kids in here, they want them to do well. Homeschooled children so often will win the spelling bees. And of course, children from other cultures, their parents want them to excel. But here in America, we seem to be intent upon mediocrity, and boy, are we doing a great job of becoming a mediocre nation where young people really don't understand mathematics. They can't read, they can't think, they don't know anything about history, they don't know anything about civics, they don't know anything about America. All they know is America is a democracy. Isn't that wonderful? We're the greatest country in the world. Well, we are the greatest country in the world. But of course, our country's been taken over, and most of our young people are incapable of reasoning and understanding what's happening because they've been deliberately dumbed down. And although the book written back in 1953 or 55, Why Johnny Can't Read, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed because there are powerful forces out there that control our educational system that have a different vision of the world. So go ahead, Karen, with some of the other items. And again, if you're out in the listening audience, the number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Go ahead, Karen.
Another area that really bothers both Steve and myself is this whole thing on teaching self-esteem. Let's make every child feel wonderful about themselves. In fact, more than 10 years ago, I saw a study that was done about the U.S. children compared with other industrialized nations. And at that time, we were failing in math and I think science. But when they tested our kids, we came out number one in self-esteem. So basically, what we have are arrogant illiterates.
Arrogant illiterates. Oh, I love that term. Arrogant illiterates.
Yeah, I mean, because they feel great about their being so dumb, and they don't even know it. And then I thought, well, you know, I can't really use that anymore because that was a 10-year-old study, so I don't know today. Wouldn't you know? God, it's so wonderful. A week ago, I read a recent study done. Guess what? Same thing. Our kids are still coming in dead last when compared to other industrialized nations, but when it comes to self-esteem, hey, we feel great about ourselves. And the problem is that some kids do that, but we have a great story by a teacher in the book where she told me personally, she said, Karen, I had a student in my class, and she said, she didn't always do real great, but she said, one day I had this paper, and she did an excellent job. She said it was wonderful. She said, so I wrote her a real nice note on it, just praising her for a job well done. And she handed the paper back to this student and looked at her face because she wanted to see her little face light up. And she said the girl just looked at it and she said, didn't get that response. And she said, aren't you happy? And the girl looked at her and she said, yeah, right. That's what they all say. Do they think we're dumb and we believe this? We have told them they're so great for so long they don't believe it when they do a good job. You know, you can't award self-esteem. It has to be earned by accomplishment, and that's what we're depriving from our children.
Well, I think it's really, it's a terrible, terrible thing what we're doing to the children, because some of them realize it. I mean, they will have, for instance, an active program of keeping kids from getting ahead because they don't want the children doing poorly to feel bad, so they'll have group scores rather than individual scores and group grades rather than individual grades, and holding the capable children back so that we wouldn't hurt the feelings of anybody who is failing. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Karen Holgate, and we're talking about what's going on as far as our educational system. Karen, go right ahead.
Well, you know, one of the reasons that Steve Baldo and I decided to write this book was because the theme that we got throughout all these different stories was basically not just an assault on our children and psychological molestation, but an attack against parental rights and the right of parents to raise their children in the way they thought they should be raised. And as we're taking more and more time out of the classroom and teaching academics to teaching psychological or sociological concepts, we got more and more concerned. And one of the areas that really concerned us was this whole thing with death education. Starting in even the earliest grades, and we actually have an unfortunate story in the book where a high school student did commit suicide, and his mother wanted to write the story to tell her story and what they were doing, even though she had gone to the school and asked them to stop it. And we started looking at other things, and I'll never forget one time I was speaking in the Midwest, and I was actually speaking in a school auditorium. And I was talking about death education, and I could see some parents kind of shaking their head, whether they didn't believe me or they couldn't believe what they were hearing. And I saw a woman get up in the back of the room, and she walked into a classroom that adjoined the auditorium. And she came back, and she sat down. And when I got all through, she stood up in the back of the room, and she said, "I saw you guys shaking your heads, but," she said, "I wish you'd follow me." And the whole room got up and followed her into this third-grade classroom. And sure enough, there were children's tombstones surrounding the room. What they had done is they had asked the children to write their own epitaphs on these tombstones, and then they hung them on the classroom wall so the children were reminded of death all day long. And there was another story where some young children, again, were asked to be, quote, done in by a family member. So these children, and then they were supposed to write their own epitaph. Now, can you imagine telling a young child to write a story about when they've been murdered by someone they love? I mean, what is the concept here? And then I had a ninth grade girl call me one day, and she said, "My mother told me that, you know, you're considering doing this book." And she said, "I wanted to tell you my story." And she said that about 3 weeks previously, they had had what was called suicide prevention. And she said, "Mrs. Holgate, I have to tell you," she said, "I've never thought about suicide in my whole life."
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here and with Karen Holgate. Before we go on, Karen, I want you to go ahead and get your website out, know how people can get hold of you and how they can get your book.
Well, they can get our book at all major bookstores or at Amazon.com or even at the publisher at WND.com. And that's really, they can contact us through WND.com.
All right.
Which is WorldNet Daily Publishers.
And, of course, it's an excellent book, very well written. Of course, I'm a little prejudiced. I know both Karen and Steve, and they've both been friends. The book is called From Crayons to Condoms. From Crayons to Condoms. Certainly a telephone number if you'd like to call us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Karen was just telling me about a course that she had heard about on suicide prevention, and because what they're doing is really raping the souls of our children. They're giving them death education. Third graders, to write the epitaph on their gravestone. Why would you do that unless you were trying to damage their minds? Why would you be giving children suicide education? This ninth grader had called you and told you about it. Tell me about what she said.
Well, she said that the reason she was calling me is that since she had had this, she said, "Every time I find I have a problem," she said, "I think about suicide." And she said, "I never did before." And she said, "I can hardly sleep at night." She said, "It's bothering me so much." And she said, "I finally started talking to some of my other friends." And she said, "They said the same thing, that now when they have a problem, they think about suicide." And that is exactly what the psychologists told us. They said, what happens is healthy children don't need this kind of training or education or whatever it is they're doing. And the troubled children, this could be the kind of training that could push them over the edge. So, again, we go back to we're forcing our teachers. Many times we are forcing them because they're being told, you will teach this or else. And we're teaching or forcing them into realms and areas that they have no experience and they have no business doing. Supposedly, they were educated to be educators, and we're not allowing them to educate. And unfortunately, as the teachers' colleges are changing, I'm not even sure they're being educated to educate anymore.
Well, let's go to Kurt, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kurt. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, well, first, a quick comment. I've been teaching 44 years, and I teach music. Some of the teaching I do is to retrain music teachers how to teach it right.
Good for you.
Well, I think I can speak with a little authority given the list of great pros that studied with me. Now, I read Rudy Fleisch's book. I went to school in 53 and 55. My third grade teacher must have read it, and we went into phonics. And then many years later, probably in my late 20s, I read Rudy Fleisch's book, and I was amazed. It's a wonderful book. But he followed up 25 years later with a book, Why Johnny Still Can't Read.
Right.
And his disassemblage of the arguments against him is the finest case I think I've ever seen of someone tearing apart idiots. I mean, it's a fabulous thing. The arguments against him were bad science, non-science, innuendo, slur. But there was nothing good, nothing intelligent done against him. And the arguments he cites that backs him up, it's an astounding read. And you've got to read them in order. It's really great stuff.
No, I mean, Why Johnny Can't Read and Why Johnny Still Can't Read, I think.
Yeah, read it as volume 1 and 2 and read it in order. The first one, you're gonna have to replaster walls because you're gonna punch holes. The second one, you're gonna be cheering so much, it's hard to put it down.
Alright, God bless. Thanks very much, Kurt, and I appreciate that. Bye bye. And Chris Kurt's one of our regular listeners here in the Monterey Bay area, and he, actually, of course, is a professional musician. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and as we see this, these things unfolding, Karen, from a logical point of view, why are they doing things that are totally illogical? Death education, suicide education, sex education, when, of course, it does nothing to prevent premarital sex. It encourages premarital sex, and of course, the effort to encourage our young people to go into the homosexual lifestyle. Why would you want to recruit young people into that sort of a lifestyle? Why would you start in kindergarten to do these things? What is going on really doesn't make sense. You would want to teach children to read. You would want to teach them how to do mathematics. You would want to teach them how to think. And unfortunately, they're doing nothing but damage to the minds of our children. Why would any logical people want to do that?
Well, you know what we have found is there's a whole wide range of reasons why teachers do some of these things. Some have told us, and these are the well-meaning ones, well, you know, today's society, parents have abdicated, they're uninvolved, they're apathetic, and they list a whole series of problems. And in many cases, they're right. You know, unfortunately, parents have abdicated a lot of their authority and given it over. On the other hand, the schools have played into that, many times taking it away. For instance, they always say they want parental involvement, but when parents go and start asking questions or wanting to answers, then they're told, wait a minute, when your child is dropped off at the schoolroom door, they are our responsibility. We know what's best for your child. So on one hand, they're saying parents aren't involved. On the other hand, if you interfere with them, all of a sudden, we're the experts, you back off. And unfortunately, too many parents believe that. And so they kind of backed off and thought, you are the expert, you know what's best, so I'm going to trust you to do it. So you have that whole dynamic going on. Then on the other hand, on some issues, like the homosexuality, the teaching the Islam in the schools, you have people oftentimes in those areas that have their own agenda, obviously, and are inculcating our children. I have one curriculum for grades K through 4 in which the very beginning page in the introduction starts out that homophobia runs rampant in this country. Where do children get these terrible messages? From movies, from TV, from their parents. So they started out at the very earliest grades teaching children as young as kindergarten that their parents are wrong if they disagree with homosexuality, whether it be religious or cultural or their own moral values. So they set the child up against the parent at the very earliest ages. And that's the type of thing that Steve and I keep trying to hammer in this book, is that parents, you better know what your child is being taught. You have the right to go in at the beginning of every year and say, I want to see your teacher's syllabus. I want to know what you're teaching my child. I want to see the recommended reading list so I can read it. Are you going to give surveys or questionnaires to my child? Don't do it unless I give express permission for it. I want to see the survey first. Don't send my child to a school counselor without my permission. You set the rules, and you have the right in many cases. And if they say, no, you can't, we have a list of legal firms that can come in and help you and assist you. And that's the kind of stand parents have to take if we're going to get re-involved in our own children's lives. Like I said, that's only if you don't take them out of the public school.
Well, Chris, I really believe that every child should be taken out of the public school. I think we'd be better off if they just closed them down. But the question I would reiterate again, Karen, is why are they doing this sort of thing? I mean, certainly it is illogical. It isn't just in one instance. It's just not one school. It's all across America. Why would anybody want to turn their children against their parents? Why would anybody want to dumb down children so they can't read? I mean, it's an easy thing to teach children phonics, and it's easy to teach them mathematics. You have to really work to destroy their ability to learn these things. Why are they doing this? This is the $64,000 question, because we know how corrupt things are. So going back to 1955, you know, and why Johnny can't read. And, of course, now it's 53 years later, and Johnny still can't read.
That's right. And it's not only can he not read, now he's getting all the social indoctrination, too. And it boggles my mind. And like I said, I think there's myriad different reasons, but I definitely think there are activists, and it's political, and there are people who are just taking control of our schools and the minds and the beliefs of our children. Look how, when Sheila Kuehl was first elected in, 92 or 93, Sheila Kuehl, for those of your listeners who don't know, was our first open lesbian in the state of California elected. And she came in with an agenda. And it was to push that homosexuality is no different than heterosexuality. And she did it very cleverly, because they've been piecemeal legislation over the years. Now, we've had probably 12, maybe 14 years of Sheila Kuehl, plus now we've had other lesbians and homosexual males in office that have pushed the agenda. And now what did we see? In 2000 we passed marriage that is only between a man and a woman in the state of California. 61%, over 61% of the populace said that's what we want as state law. Now, of course, we have a state constitutional bill coming up that will be voted on in November. And as they now take surveys, the younger the voter, the more apt they are to say there's no difference, we ought to have same-sex marriage. And why is it? Because we've had 15 years almost of teaching our kids that there is no difference between same-sex relationships and heterosexual relationships, and that's what they're doing. They're changing the culture of our whole culture through our schools all the time in the minds of our youngsters as they reach voting age, and that is what's happening. There's a good chance that in the state of California, at least, that we will not be able to pass that constitutional amendment unless people get out and vote.
Well, I would hope that people would stop and think. You know, in fact, it was so interesting this last weekend when of course, we heard on the news, you listen to talk about the gay rights parade in San Francisco and how many hundreds of thousands of people were there, and a tremendous impact in the news and the television. You know, you could put a million Christians there in Washington, D.C., demonstrating for pro-life, and hardly a word in the control media, but you get the homosexuals out there. they'll get all sorts of publicity, all sorts of, you know, praise for their courageous stands, and then of course, you know, what this whole thing about gay marriage, why suddenly we saw this over and over again, and it always have them embracing and kissing. And you wonder why all of the media is in favor of same-sex marriage. You would think there'd be two sides of the issue. There'd be some newspapers that'd be on one side, some would be on the other. All of them are on the same side, which really shows, of course, that people who control the media and control the television have an agenda. But, of course, at the same time, the next thing was 1,300 fires raging in California. Strange, we've never seen anything like it before. I mean, 1,300 fires, many of them, of course, we can't even try to control, raging in California. And, you know, I guess some of us just are certainly conspiratorial enough to believe that God does bring judgment upon societies that turn against him. And I believe there's a tremendous spiritual component behind this whole effort to push homosexuality, behind this whole effort to corrupt our children. And unfortunately, most parents, even Christian parents, have no idea the spiritual model that's going on behind the scenes.
Yes. And I'll tell you, another thing that bothers me is the kinds of questionnaires and surveys that they're getting our kids. And oftentimes, the children, of course, aren't aware of the kind of information, personal information about themselves or their families that they are giving the schools. For instance, let me read just a few questions. From sixth graders in Pennsylvania, they ask things about, I fight with my parents often. I have too many responsibilities at home. My parents fight a lot. My parents are headed for divorce. Now, how would a sixth grader know if his parents are headed for divorce? Or here's a material world questionnaire, and this one is a federally funded, which means it goes on throughout the United States. List the members of your family, include name, age, occupation, and grade level. How much money does each family member earn per month? What is each family member's most valued possession? What types of sacred objects are around the house? That's illegal. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, are they available, and what family members use them? Now, do you know the kinds of personal information, and they know how then when they're doing their training, what kinds of training that they can do to get these children to change their minds on certain things? And here's one. This one, I guess the teacher put this together by himself. If your mother promised to be home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to take you to the movies but didn't show up until supper time and didn't even phone, what would be a good punishment for her? Would punishing her be likely to make her on time in the future? Now, what kind of a question is that? When you're mad at your parents and want to get back at them, what little things do you do to anger or embarrass them? If you could change one thing about your parents, what would it be?
Well, what they're really doing, of course, as you well know, Karen, they're trying to turn the child against the parent. And, of course, once they've destroyed the relationship between the parent and the child, then, of course, they will be dependent upon the school and the government.
Well, exactly. And, you know, parents don't have a clue this is going on. In fact, one of the things we say in the book, too, is parents need to talk to their kids. They need to tell them the kinds of things they expect of their children, things they don't want them to do. For instance, these surveys. The way we got most of these surveys, some of them came to us from teachers, believe it or not. Some of them are because the students themselves looked at them and said, whoops, this is one of those things my parents didn't want me to answer, and they'll fold them up and have actually stuck them in their backpacks and brought them home and showed them to their parents. So, again, parents, you've got to get in there. If you're going to leave your child in a public school, you better know what's going on, because this is the type of thing that's going on, and it's just unbelievable.
Well, I really believe that they're out for the souls of our children. And when you understand the spiritual element of what's going on, it really makes sense. The Great Tax Exempt Foundation's been funding these educational changes for years. And, of course, working in concert with the National Educational Association, which, of course, you know, was put out literally sometimes $100,000 to get their people on the school board so that they will go along with these really these traumatic programs which are being thrust upon our children. And our children, you know, with values, clarification, education, the old lifeboat, I'm sure you ran into that many times, didn't you? The old lifeboat, who are we going to throw out of the lifeboat? Will we throw our mother or father out, or one of our brothers or sisters, or the old priest? You know, who are we going to throw out of the lifeboat? And when does a child get to a position that they determine who lives and who dies? And unfortunately, we destroy the very moral fabric that we're trying to create. The parents are trying to rear up the children in the way of the Lord, and the schools actively, intentionally, maliciously are trying to tear it down. And you say it couldn't happen in my school, ladies and gentlemen. It's happening all across America. That's what this book, From Crayons to Condoms, is all about. I recommend the book to our listeners. Once again, where can people get it, Karen?
They can get it at all their major bookstores. It's available at Amazon.com, any place.
Okay, fine. Crayons to Condoms, and of course it's put out by World Net Daily, a Joseph Ferris organization, doing a great job bringing the information out you're not going to get elsewhere. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Karen, you now have 3 minutes to wrap up the program, then I'll let you go.
Okay. You know, we talked about a lot of different subjects in this hour, but I have to tell you, one of the probably most alarming to me is the pushing of Islam in our public schools. We know that you can't teach Christianity, you know, we can't even mention God, let alone the Bible or Jesus. And yet, we have stories in the book that talk about where Islam is actually being taught, sometimes led prayers to Allah by public school employees, where they close the classroom doors during classroom time. And, I mean, there's story after story in here that we were just shocked at some of the things that they are doing with public funds and public schools with public employees. And at the same time, the last story in that chapter is a story about a 9-year-old boy who was not allowed to bring a Bible to school for his own personal use. This is how our public schools have shifted over the last, well, decades. Like I said, the foreword to the book was written by Phyllis Schlafly, and she has done a great job in like 4 pages of summing up 50 years of education and showing the decline and how we got to where we are now. And again, I can't stress enough, folks, if you insist on leaving your children in the public school system, you have to be involved. You have to know what's going on, or your child's going to be lost, and you won't even know it.
And, of course, the thing is, it is not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. I mean, this is not something that a normal evolution. This is an organized, orchestrated, well-financed program. And, of course, that, of course, is covered very well in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the spirits of forces working behind the scenes who would transform our society from what it was, that was a Christian and moral society, into what it has become today. And that's a hedonistic society. And I think it's about time people begin asking, you know, what is this really all about? Because we can talk about how terrible things are, but we have to get to the real forces behind this. In fact, one of the most important books that we carry is called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It was written 53 years ago by Rennie Worms. I think it was published in 1958, so it would be 50 years since it was actually published. And it goes into how the great tax-exempt foundations 50 years ago were financing this effort to destroy our educational system. And, of course, this information has been actively suppressed through all the intervening years. Karen Holgate, it's always a pleasure having you with us, and love to get you on again sometime, maybe some of our other programs to talk about.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program with Karen Holgate, an old friend and somebody I was always respected. Well, Chris, how do you begin to put all of the things we're talking about into perspective? And you have to understand it's not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. The book, the Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we've kept in print for the last 30 years, or last, I should say, probably 15 years now. It really goes into the report of the Reese Committee that came out back in 1950, but it would have come out in 1954. And the Reese Committee investigated the Great Tax Exempt Foundations to find out what they were doing and found that the Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, and the other foundations were emphasizing education, and they were actively trying to change the direction of our educational system. And, of course, they were pushing socialism and Marxism and humanism. They were funding the activities of the Communist Party right here in the United States. And, of course, they'd taken us from war to war. The Carnegie Endowment for International Peace was instrumental in getting America into World War I. These things, you say, those didn't make sense. Well, of course they would if you understood the spiritual forces that energized these people. And for that reason, we suggest you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which incidentally is going to be published by a major publisher very soon and available in bookstores across America. You, Chris, need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. The Forbidden Secret. It's a DVD, and there's a syllabus that comes with that. You need to get our talk on the planned police state, not only to understand what is happening geopolitically, but of course there we actually go into the writings of the people on the other side. The people who energize and control, the people who control the great tax-exempt foundations, and of course who control the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, and of course the Masons and the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists. Who really controls them? Well, that's why my talk on the planned police state is important, because at the end, why, and you get the syllabus, why we simply tell you what they say. And who are they? Why, they're there. The spiritual hierarchy, the occult hierarchy that rules the world today, the ancients of wisdom, the elder brothers, the great white brotherhood. And you can look all of these things up on the internet, ancients of wisdom, the great white brotherhood, the elder brothers, and you get all sorts of reference to them in the occult organizations, which of course work silently behind the scenes, because the last thing they want you to know is the truth. We actually have a great three pamphlets called The Cult Hierarchy. You need to get that. You need to read it. You need to, of course, read you need to listen to our program on the supernatural, my interviews with Johanna Michelson, who is actually a medium. You need to get our book on the satanic crimes and the four tape set that goes with that. You need to get the four tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. That's The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. And there's so much other material out there that you need to get. And if you don't believe the media in America is controlled, you go up on the internet on Amazon.com and try to get a copy of Lindsay Williams' book, The Energy Non-Crisis. There were none last week, over the weekend. There was one book that was up for sale for $1,999.95. It was listed in five places on the internet. It's no longer listed. Somebody's bought it up. They buy up books. They suppress books. They suppress Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. For they actively suppress the book, Foundations, The Power and Influence, which we brought back in print. And, of course, if you want to know anything about the energy non-crisis, you need to get our four-tape set on the oil deception. It's four-tape, a four-CD set. And you need to get the DVD we'll be carrying called The Energy Non-Crisis by Lindsay Williams. It'll be available, I hope, within the next 2 weeks. It's an excellent DVD. We are able to circulate it with Lindsay's permission as he tells the story of Gull Island and the massive deposits of oil off the north slope of Alaska. There's no shortage of oil. That's not going to matter. You're going to be paying $10 a gallon for your gasoline before long, but there's no shortage of oil. There's plenty of oil out there. They may very well down the line actually drop the price of oil. We don't know what they're going to do. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great big beautiful blue globe floating from the void of Yah's creation. It is Monday, the 30th of June, 2008, and yes, news has broken out of Washington, D.C.